Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome back to Open Floor. I'm Rohan Arjuni, joined today by an Open Floor OG. You know his work from his time at Blazers Edge, CBS, the point forward, a former senior writer at Sports Illustrated. He's the author of the book Bubble Ball, Inside the NBA's Fight to Save a Season, a national writer for the Washington Post, and the Open Floor Globe. He doesn't need an introduction. It's Ben Golliver. Ben, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Rohan. So what is this, alumni week? Is that what's happening?
Listen,
mean, we're all taking turns here.
We're pulling out all the stops before the season. We're just trying to – I feel like the Globe's been so good to us. I'm just trying to give back. You know, we see the reviews. We know people miss you, Ben. I can't tell you how many emails we still get, listeners since the Ben and Sharp days. You know, people still dropping in the Golliverisms in the emails. You know, your legacy has maintained through – this podcast. So it was only a matter of time. I wanted to save it for a special moment. I could think of no better moment than, you know, right before the season here. We have to know your takes. Ben, by the way, also the host of the Greatest of All Talk podcast, which you guys know Andrew Sharp on as well. So if you enjoy Ben's podcast work, please subscribe to GOAT, where you get a really unfiltered version of you, I gotta say, Golliver.
Well, I was gonna accuse you of buttering me up to start, but actually, I know the Open Floor Globe does ride that hard. I know you're not even just making stuff up. Yeah. I certainly miss a number of the people from back in those days, but a lot of them have come over to the GOAT, like you said. We've got a really cool community going. Can you believe it? We're on our fourth season over there. It seems kind of crazy. Pandemic throws all the time off, but it's great to be back here to talk to the entire Globe, and we've got a season coming up. I mean, I know it's been Robert Sarver, it's been Draymond, it's been Kevin Durant's upset, it's been Ime Udoka. We got real hoops coming on Tuesday. I'm going to be up at Chase Center, man.
I can't wait for the real basketball to tip off. I'm gonna ask Ryan Ritter to sit me right next to you. Ben Golliver wanted me to ask you if he could sit me right next to you during the ring ceremony. No, I'm with you, man. I'm really excited. I think, you know, we'll get to it. We're gonna do five big questions today that I've come up with for Ben. I think, like last year, I don't know if this is just like the remnants of the post Durant Warriors era, and it's wishful thinking, but I think we genuinely have a lot of parity in the NBA right now. That doesn't mean I think every team has a shot to win the title, but I don't feel like there's a runaway favorite this year, do you?
Well, you're reading my mind. I actually have a story coming out on this to tip off the season. But if you go back just even to, you know, 2017, 2018, 2019 range, where, you know, the Warriors are in five straight finals. They play the Cavaliers four straight years. It was unprecedented. We had never seen that before in the NBA. You look at since then, all four of the conference finals teams have changed year after year, every single year for 5 years straight, which basically never happens in the NBA because, you know, typically you got super teams. You know, you got superstar guys who are just back there every single year. And we could point to a couple different explanations. I mean, the schedule being super wonky and, you know, teams that make it to the finals having a real tight turnaround. I mean, I know your Miami Heat can probably use that as an excuse after the 2020 bubble finals. They got, what, like 2.5 weeks to catch their breath before it was time to start going out there again. But, you know, there's been a lot of injury issues as well, which could be a pace of play thing. It could be everybody's just thrown out of their normal body rhythms over the course of a 12-month season. But for whatever reason, no one's been able to kind of get back to the summit. And I'm curious because I think most people view this as like the first normal, quote unquote, post-pandemic, quote unquote, season the NBA is going to have. I mean, we're really not hearing a lot of talk about disruptions or, you know, other than Bradley Beal, not a lot of a health protocol situation so far to start the season. And I guess, are we going to see a return of how the NBA typically was, which is super team dominated? Are we going to see Golden State run through the Western Conference and get right back there? Are we going to see Boston get through this Ime Udoka stuff and get back there? I mean, it's certainly possible, but they're going to have, like you mentioned, a lot of people challenging them and nipping at their heels. So I don't know how you feel about parody. I mean, kind of a hot take for me is parody sucks, dude. I like greatness. I like super teams.
I like super teams to an extent. I think, like, whenever I talk about the Big Three Heat, I think the best part about that team was that they were beatable. So I think the Warriors were too unfair. You need a middle ground. I want four or five, maybe three or four great teams at the top, but I want to know that they can lose on a given night or in a given matchup. You know, I remember, I think it was 2 years in a row, like the Spurs would play the Warriors on opening night. And it's like the first night with Durant, like the Spurs waxed them. And I remember watching that game, like, all right, so? Like, it just didn't matter. And then I remember the first night when I moved to Los Angeles and we're watching Lakers Clippers and it's opening night and the Clippers won that game. But I remember being like, oh, this actually feels like it matters again. So I'm with you. I don't need all 30 teams to have a shot. I don't mind that there's going to be an epic tanking race this year, but I like that there's a good group of teams at the top, and it feels like anyone, like I feel like the Celtics could beat the Warriors could beat the Celtics, you know, it could all of them have a chance at least.
So you don't view these Warriors, I guess, in the same way that you viewed like previous iterations. I mean, I think the comparison that I would make for last year's Warriors was sort of to that first year's group, right? Where they didn't have the Kevin Durant, so they weren't this crazy, unbeatable Goliath. You know, this year's version of the Warriors, I actually think people might be sleeping on their ceiling a little
really
bit because
they're really good.
Yeah. They have continuity that they didn't have last year because they're not worrying about Klay Thompson coming back months into the season. They should get better or at least more minutes, far more minutes with, you know, shared between Steph, Klay, and Draymond, which should really help them. And the young guys are getting older. You know, I mean, you should expect Wiseman, Kuminga, and Moody to give them real contributions. These are not, you know, rookies or a guy in Wiseman's case who's trying to, like, pull his career together. Like, you know, they've had some time to get themselves you know, acclimated and ready to go. At the same time, like, it all hinges on Steph's health. Mm-hmm. You know, they were one kind of fluky ankle thing in the finals away from losing that finals probably, what, in 5 or 6 games, right? The fact that he was able to stay healthy, it worked out great. And also, he had to get healthy for the playoffs, and he got a little time off before that postseason run, so he wasn't worn down. You don't know if this season's going to play out the same way, right? So I view them, it's weird. Are they better than last year's team? On paper, they should be. Mm-hmm. Is it going to go as smooth, or are they going to be as charmed as last year's team? Probably not. But either way, I think I buy your premise. I don't view them as this, like, overwhelming Goliath. Like, I don't think people would be shocked if the Clippers beat them in a series, you know? I mean, maybe a team like Denver or Dallas, if they somehow knock Golden State off, that would open people's eyes. But you know, I think they're vulnerable for sure.
Yes. I think they have the most runaway potential, but they need to realize it. And I think the biggest difference is just age. I mean, we saw Draymond look a little rickety at times in the finals last year. Obviously, he's got his unique situation now. A contract year,
well,
kind of.
His right fist is in midseason form, you know?
Oh, God. Oh, man. And Steph, like, frankly, we don't know what the aging version of Steph looks like. Steph was also by his own standards, not great in the regular season last year after like December. I mean, part of that was when Draymond got hurt, but I believe last year was his first sub 40 three-point shooting season. I got to look that up. But he was not a typical Steph. You know, the impact is there. It's always going to be there. So, but
yeah. I would push back a little bit on that. I think some of that was situational, not having Klay, because, you know, Klay has just a crazy amount of gravity. You know, Steph also, he is getting older, so there's going to be some more swoon periods. But I thought he came out to start last season.
Definitely. I mean, people thought looking he was going to win MVP incredible. And obviously, he.
Right. And then, you know, he just had a great, great postseason. I mean, that series against Boston. I know you got some, you know, green beer drinkers on this on this show. I mean, he just grabbed their heart, ripped it out of their chest. I mean, unbelievable series. Clearly the best moment of his career. And, you know, so when I'm taking a step back and looking at like, all right, what's the stakes for the Warriors? I mean, Steph has a chance to get his fifth title without changing teams. LeBron stuck on four. He's changed teams multiple times. There is huge narrative juice on this Warriors season, because if they do go back-to-back, again, do it without KD, and now Steph has more rings than LeBron, we have to like re-legislate the last 15 years of the NBA. Yeah. And we really have to say, all right, well, what are the values that matter for winning? Maybe staying in one place, allowing a team to build around you. Maybe it's you know, a certain leadership style that Steph Curry has that other people doesn't have. I mean, all those kinds of questions get raised if Golden State actually wins this year. Do I think they're going to do it? I mean, I think in general, like you said, it's wide open. It's easier to bet against them, but they got a shot, and it's really wild to think about. I mean, if Steph's on that Kobe tier with five rings and that Duncan tier with five rings, all with the same franchise, and now we're saying, can he catch Mike? I mean, that's crazy.
It's nuts. Know?
And that's not something that we thought would happen when they're in the lottery 2 years in a row, right?
It almost becomes like the Duncan Kobe argument again, which people have had. And I want to get to the questions, because a lot of these topics, you've already touched on things I want to really dive deep into. But to your point, if we end this era with more people wanting to grow up to be like Steph Curry, more NBA players trying to emulate his career, staying in one place, being coachable, you know, the leadership style, like, that would be fantastic for the NBA in many ways. And frankly, fantastic for the consumer, because I keep harping on this. Like, to me, one of the great parts about the Warriors is that they've stayed together, that the core has stayed together. We get this familiar cast. It's been true ups and downs. It's really just kind of, I think, one of the, you know, even the Duncan Spurs, it's like they didn't dip into the lottery. They didn't have this moment where it looked like this was all over. The fact that they've been able to rebound from that, I think it's like, it's hard to kind of grasp in the moment. But like 10 years from now, we're going to look back on this, the entirety of this run, and be like, this is truly one of the greatest things that's ever happened in the NBA.
Oh, yeah. And well, last year's run, which I think a lot of them cherish because it was like the one that they did without the super team. I mean, you can point to so many different guys and say they don't win the title without that guy. They don't win it without Draymond. They don't win it without Wiggins. You could argue
Otto
they don't
Porter?
Even win it without Gary Payton II.
Dude, GP2 is
I'm not going to go that
Otto
far.
Come on, dude.
But no, I mean, like the general idea of like the collective getting it done, right, was what made that team so special. And when you have a slogan that on its face is as corny as strength in numbers, but they actually live their values and they like live up to that slogan time and time again, you have to take it seriously and give them their credit. And, you know, to me, I think they're going to be the most entertaining team, the most must-watch team of this season, in part because of the internal drama aspect, right? Jordan Poole's handled himself great this last week. What happens the next time Draymond flips out of practice on somebody, or just in general loses his cool, or gets himself suspended, or gets a flagrant foul, or whatever it might be? How do they kind of ride that wave emotionally over the course of a season? It's must-watch TV for their style of play, but also because of the personalities involved. And you're right, when guys and teams bounce from city to city and they're changing their supporting cast every single year, they don't have that same place in your heart or the same place in the collective consciousness that the Warriors do. And right now, they're kind of on their own level right now.
So it's going to be a ton of fun. I'm truly so excited for the season. I'm so excited for Inside the NBA to be back. I'm excited for Ben Golliver press conference clips to be back. It's going to be a lot of fun. But I want to get to, so Ben, I came up with five big questions here. Now,
Hold on. Oh. Are these, big questions or burning questions?
These
I mean, you gotta work on your.
I didn't want to go with burning.
Salesmanship.
I didn't want to go with burning because these are big picture. These are, let's zoom out a little bit. Talk about the big issues headed into this NBA season. Now, this first one, you touched on this a little bit, and it brings me incredible joy to ask this question. I'll ask the question, then I'll make a little case for why I think it could be true, even though I'm not necessarily sure I believe, but I'll make the case. Question number one, are the Celtics done? Okay, and here's the case. Boston starts last season 18-21, okay? That's through, I think, January. They're under 500, early January. Now, then they go on this massive run, okay? There's no question about it. They look like runaway favorites. I mean, you look at their net rating, lineup stats, all that stuff after about that January 18-21 mark. It looks like they should have run away with the finals. But then they're pushed by a Middleton-less Bucks team in the second round to seven games. Bucks probably should have won that game 6 at home. They're pushed by a Miami team to seven games. You know, Kyle Lowry's hurt. Tyler Hero's hurt. P.J. Yeah. Tucker's hurt.
Not even you are claiming those Heat, man. I mean, that was a rough series, bro.
And they, you know, one shot away from not even making the finals. They obviously lose the finals. This summer, Jaylen Brown, included in the KD trade rumors, doesn't seem to be too thrilled about it. We don't know about his long-term future there. Then obviously we have the Ime Udoka situation. I think Udoka got a ton of credit for their turnaround last year after that 18-21 start. You know, his directness with the team, his bluntness, etc., turning Marcus Smart into a capable point guard. I think Udoka gets credit for a lot of these things. Their defense. He had cachet. You know, he came over. He'd coached Philly. He'd coached KD in Brooklyn. A former.
Well,
player.
He's a Portland guy, Ron. Yeah. I mean, you know, he's got the juice, man.
Exactly. He's got the Pacific Northwest glow. Now they go to someone totally unproven, a 34-year-old Joe Mazzulla. Because to me, if you're saying they're still a title contender, that's almost like saying coaching doesn't matter. So that's my big question: are the Celtics done? Ben, what do you think?
Well, I think the biggest factor that they actually have to worry about, like from here going forward, is this Robert Williams situation, because he was like an absolute anchor to their defense. When you're talking about, you know, front court athleticism, help defense, shot blocking, keeping people out of the paint, forcing teams to take low percentage shots in the playoffs, that's what he does. And you look at him next to Horford. I mean, Horford is due for a regression season. This guy against the Milwaukee Bucks saved their season.
Horford was the best player in that series. Horford is coming off a year where the season before he didn't play. Now going into, he had a deep playoff run and was the most important player on any given night.
No, so I think it's a 1-2 punch here where you don't have Williams for a couple months and you're worried about Horford coming back to earth, and you look at the guys that they have behind them and, like, you know, it's just not people who you're going to get super excited about. So I think that's a concern. At the same time, coaching matters. I'm going to say that up front. But this does seem kind of like a plug-and-play situation. Almost all of your guys are vets. You know, they've all played a lot of years together. Marcus Smart, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum have had every argument that you could possibly have to make. These guys showed an incredible defensive commitment to each other last season. And they're going to win a lot of games as long as the defense is rock solid. I like the Malcolm Brogdon move. I'm not going to, you know, pitch it as like some sort of a crazy game changer, but they needed somebody as a connector off their bench. He's high IQ. He's experienced. He can be someone who a young coach can trust to just sort of handle things as they get up to speed. And I don't see another overwhelming team in the Eastern Conference this year. You know, if you're saying like, are they done? They can't be contenders. Well, to me, it's like, all right, well, there's some team that's like so much better than they are. I think Brooklyn's got way more problems than they do. I think Philadelphia bears the burden of proof because they choke literally every single season. And you've got Milwaukee, where I like the Bucks a lot, but they have three guys who have to be healthy and in sync in the playoffs, all of them, for them to make a deep run. I mean, we saw it last year without Middleton. They also missed P.J. Tucker, you know, going to Miami last year. They really could have used him in that Boston series. Maybe would have won the Boston series if they had P.J. Tucker and Middleton was still injured. But that's, you know, a different hypothetical. So to me, Boston's still in the mix. I like their roster on paper more than almost anybody else's roster in the Eastern Conference. And I think that you know, Boston has some moves on the coaching stuff if it's not going well. Like, you trust Mazzulla in the short term, right? If it's a disaster, you just throw the bag at Frank Vogel and you're like, look, dude, I mean, you obviously want to come back and do this and be the hero. I mean, you would be, you know, a big time, like, savior type figure. You've coached in the playoffs. You're all about defense.
Can they hire a head coach? Like, do they throw a 1 year bag at Frank Vogel? Yeah. Do they, like, because that's another thing is that's what surprises me to an extent about their coaching situation is that they did not go out and get someone proven. When, again, it was the way they've discussed Udoka, it's like we'll reevaluate after a year. It doesn't really seem to indicate that they want to bring him back. So can they even hire a head coach, do you think?
Well, they could do whatever they want. I mean, certainly, like, there's nothing legally preventing them from hiring Frank Vogel into that role. Now, I think what they would want to do is resolve the Udoka situation contractually before hiring their next coach, because you don't want to be stuck kind of trying to pay two guys at once. I don't really see a way that Udoka can come back. And, I mean, at this point, like, the trust is just totally shattered. No one's going to look at him the same. And it's just better if everybody moves on. I think that they're going to have to figure out some sort of a clean break between the two of them at some point. But let's say things don't go well and you reach December 1st and you're saying, look, we just need more experience on the bench. Like, there are options. You can go out there and get somebody, even if it's not as your head coach. You could just get a lead assistant for Mazzulla who is handling a lot of the nitty-gritty decision-making or maybe even the communication with the players to kind of get you back on track. But I've liked what I've seen from Boston during the preseason, man. Mm-hmm. They don't seem like this team that's stuck with a substitute teacher and throwing spitballs, you know, on the blackboard and just, you know, not paying attention. They seem locked in, kind of ready to go. And I don't know if that means they're going to win as many games as last year, but they're going to win enough to be in that East top tier. And, let's put some pressure on Tatum too. You know, it's like, all right, you're supposed to be this MVP candidate. You know, you had some real moments in last year's playoffs, but it was a collective effort. I mean, he got dragged by Horford at times.
The conference finals MVP.
Yeah, the Larry Bird, the inaugural Larry Bird MVP was definitely a debatable selection in that one. But you know, he has to atone for what happened in the finals. There's no question about it. I want to see him coming back motivated. I want to see him, you know, just growing because he's a young player. And, you know, typically, like, you know, how much does coaching matter? Well, if you have a superstar guy leading you on a night-in, night-out basis, if Tatum's really a top-8 player or MVP voters, I think last year said he was a top-5 guy, like, you know, the Warriors got by without Steve Kerr for a while. Luke Walton looked like a world beater in Steve Kerr's absence, right? So you should your talent should be able to pull you through to a certain degree. And I think I put a little bit more of this on Tatum's shoulder and to a lesser extent Brown's shoulders than I do on Mazzulla. Like, you know, I mean, this is not his situation to save, you know? Like, you're just a stand-in, you know? You're being called into a difficult spot, and hopefully the players save him. And that's how it should go if it's going to go well.
Two more things, just to continue to play devil's advocate here. They went from having, I think, the most enviable front court between Horford, Rob, Grant, and Danilo Gallinari to Horford, who we mentioned, there's an age concern there, a minutes concern there. Grant Williams, who I guess is going to be playing for a contract the entire year, and Aldery seems to annoy people a little bit. And and I guess Sam Hauser. I want to, like, you know, the Democratic People's Republic of Boston, their state media is already pushing Sam Hauser hard. We're getting a lot of Sam Hauser propaganda. I can't get FanDuel odds on Pina's first ringer story being about Sam Hauser. It's off the board. There's some questions there. And you mentioned two other teams that you're like, I don't know, the Sixers have the burden of proof. I think Philly had a fantastic offseason. I love Melton and Tucker on that team.
Did their offseason get overrated? Because I've been there with you. I've been praising it pretty regularly.
Did we go too far?
Are any of these guys even good? I mean, Melton didn't honestly, Melton didn't play important minutes for Memphis during the playoff run. Harrell had a lot of off-court issues. Not a playoff player. Daniel House, only guy who got kicked out of the bubble. I mean, okay, so what's the big win? Is it because they got some, you know, deal with James where they're saving $20 million more than we all feared that they were going to pay him? I mean, they're still relying upon James, right?
I think Tucker and Melton can give them something in a playoff series, and they're not – I don't know what the number is, but, you know, we just
did
our –
Do you agree with this?
I already love where agree this with is this. Going. Okay.
Miami will miss Tucker more than Philadelphia will benefit from Tucker. What do you think?
I do agree with that. I also, but let me put it this way. There are not, we just did our SI Top 100, which you're intimately familiar with, not to bring up some PTSD. There are not 100 guys I'd want more than.
Intimately?
There are not 100 guys I'd want more than PJ Tucker in a playoff series. There's maybe not 50 guys.
He's on my list.
Yeah. There's maybe not
50 guys. There's 50 guys. I hear you, but at some point he's going to fall off, right?
Yes.
Like, I mean, we are going to start to see that.
This was the
impact stuff. Yeah.
This was a one-year, $30 million contract that they, like, pre-stretch provisioned, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the offensive stuff has already fallen off from him, so that's going to be kind of an issue because, you know, we saw their offense, which we got really excited about last year, especially after the trade because, you know, Harden's looking like this pick-and-roll maestro and Joel finally has somebody to take the pressure off him and everything else, but Tucker in the playoffs crimps your spacing big time because he stands in the corner three and doesn't shoot, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's like, all right, well, now we're playing 4-on-5. So I just think that there are some compromises you have to make with some of their lineup groups. I think the one guy who could save the whole thing is Maxey. I think he's like probably my favorite 76er from the last like 15 years, you know, maybe since Iverson, honestly. But I'm with you. I just think that like, their summer improved the roster. There's no question about it. And also when like Danny Green goes down in the playoffs and you're just like, they have no way to fill in that spot. These guys are dead on arrival. The way that they were able to flip that narrative by being so aggressive and grabbing all these other guys was really impressive.
Also, Embiid,
I'm just wondering
Embiid
if we've gone overboard
out,
praising their summer.
And said Embiid almost took out Tucker the same way he took out Danny Green, just with the insane fall. It's like, dude, you need to chill.
Yeah, you got to give that guy space, socially distance around Embiid when he's going to the hardwood.
So you're coming back around.
Yeah, I just wonder,
backlash to your own praise.
Well, what I'm really saying is nobody else did anything this summer. I mean, really, if you look at the major contenders who made, you know, like we got really excited about Malcolm Brogdon, right? And if we've reached the point where like the winner of the offseason is the team that trades for DeAnthony Melton and signs Montrezl Harrell, who's never done anything in the playoffs ever.
Got Doc fired.
Maybe that's something maybe that's something about the curve that we're grading on as opposed to like how great Philly's offseason
was. I like
was,
that
right?
take. I like that take. And the other team I'll throw out is the Bucks. It's going to – my fear is just how old some of their rotation pieces are, Lopez, Matthews, Ingles. They're going to – they should just let Ingles play the last 10 games of the regular season to get in shape for the playoffs. Like, just save him. But I don't want to see another Grayson Allen postseason minute from Bud ever again. It's going to turn me into the Joker. But, okay, so I think you made a good case for the Celtics. But I want to throw out there, it's going to be – one of the most fascinating test cases in NBA history for kind of the impact of coaching, in my opinion. But I want to move on to big question number two. Ben Golliver, this player signed an extension this offseason. He might be, some people think he's the greatest player of all time. Others would say he's not. Will LeBron James make another NBA Finals?
I mean, that's a tricky one because he could run this last few years out in a lot of different ways. I mean, what if he signed a vet min with Golden State? You know, it's like, would that be out of the question, you know, 2 years from now? I don't know. I'm gonna actually say no, though. I mean, he's not going to do it in L.A. You know, people are trying to talk themselves back into the Lakers. And I think some of these Russell Westbrook preseason clips where he's just like not associating with any of his teammates are making people realize like, oh, yeah, they had one gigantic problem that they did not solve whatsoever, and it's still going to be a problem, so don't get too excited about them. But I was struck during the media day and preseason run-up about how LeBron is like putting no expectations on this group. It reminds me a lot of when he first came to LA, and you know everybody was so young. He's playing with Ingram and Lonzo, and it was like the first time in a while that I had never heard him talk about titles or contention or like we're preparing for a long season. We want to be ready to be good when it matters. He was just in a totally different mind state. And I think that there's real scars from how last year went. It was a mess, you know? And LeBron, he showed signs of slippage. He was not the same guy last year as he was previously. His defensive intensity night to night wasn't there. His ability to stay healthy night to night wasn't there. And typically those are not things that reverse as you get older, especially as you're getting close to 40. And so I don't see him leading another finals team, if that's kind of a cop-out way of answering
it. That's the real question.
Yeah. And well, and, I mean, we could also dream about, you know, some brawny LeBron tag team back to Cleveland, you know, hopping in for like a 2025 NBA finals. Like that would be, you know, pretty cool and fun to watch, I suppose. You know, Ken Griffey Jr. has said he wants to be there at the first game when they play together. So that's always a nice bonus. You get a little money off of a Major League Baseball legend. But yeah, I don't know. I don't want to call LeBron done, but I just think he is definitely in a different chapter of his career. And honestly, I think it started last year. And I think it's a credit to his fame and the respect factor that he has accumulated over the course of the last 15 years that people didn't write him personally off more last year and chose instead to blame Russ and to blame AD because he was a part of the reason why they weren't great. You look at their record with LeBron on the court, they're basically 500. That's not where it was 3 years ago. I mean, typically he's always playing at a 50-win pace minimum when he's on the court. And even when he was healthy, he didn't have that kind of an impact last season.
I mean, they just painted themselves into a corner with the Russ trade. Pelinka getting the extension is wild. It's really wild. I mean, you look at their 3-12. Who do you think their third best player is?
Well, this was a summer league conversation, but I had an executive for a different team say, you know, do you think Wenyen Gabriel is going to cut free from the Lakers? We're maybe hoping to like pick him up. I was like, bro, he's their third best player. He's not going to cut free. Obviously, I'm being a little hyperbolic, but no, I mean, you saw the reports about here's what their starting lineup is going to look like. Maybe it's going to have, you know, Damian at center, and maybe it's going to have Kendrick Nunn. And I looked at the starting lineup projected. There's two starters, LeBron and Anthony Davis. Three other guys are not starting quality players. And so I think it's, you know, it's getting to the beat the dead horse territory with the Lakers where it's like, yeah, we know they're not going to be a top three team in the Western Conference. They're going to be lucky to be in that play-in mix. And it's a little bit sad, frankly, because you want better for LeBron's late stage. But I don't have sympathy for him because he took the money this summer on the extension. Yeah. He had options, right? He could have potentially tried to, do the puppet master thing one more time, get himself to a place with better title odds. And instead, he decided to take the money to have the comfort here in Southern California to make sure he didn't disrupt his family. Those have become his priorities. And I think more power to him, you know, but that's not going to help you get closer to six.
Yeah. Two things. One, it's a bummer. I'm with you. It's not that he's done. It's just a bummer. It's sad to think that he's not in the mix. I think we had him seventh on the top 100 this year, which I think is the lowest he ever finished. And I think guys are in a position to overtake him.
Well, Kawhi or LeBron?
We had LeBron.
For this year, Kawhi or LeBron?
Oh, God. We had LeBron higher.
No, I'm just saying for you. I'm saying for you, though. I mean,
I think LeBron still. Listen, man, Kawhi. Here's a question I meant to ask you.
Are you sure?
When was the last time Kawhi, Steph, KD, and LeBron all started and finished a postseason? Do you remember when that was?
Oh, my God.
2016.
So, like, I was going to guess 2014, so I was going for even further back. That's crazy. Yeah, well, Kawhi's a ghost, man. Yeah. I mean, this guy's making so much money to do so little for the Clippers over these last couple of years, and I kind of hope that gigantic investment for Ballmer pays off this season. I'm wondering, though, if it's Kawhi's turn. I've been a real Kawhi doubter or skeptic, you know, especially over the last couple of years. I've kind of been a truther, honestly, you know, trying to give all the credit to Duncan for his early career success.
First of all, that's shocking to me because I feel like the last time we had a conversation about Kawhi, you were all in on Kawhi. I remember we were at that TNT event together where you were asking Chuck, like, who's better, Kawhi or LeBron? And Barkley was like, Kawhi. And I feel like that was a moment we were all in on Kawhi. And it's flipped. It's gone completely the other way.
Well, you know, the greatest ability is availability, Rohan, and that's been it's been a big problem for Kawhi. But I just look at defensive intensity and two-way impact. I don't think LeBron can consistently do it anymore, and I have more faith in Kawhi being able to do that. And, you know, you look at the kind of team that you can build around Kawhi now where you have all these wings playing interchangeably in super small lineups and active defense and all this stuff. And that really gets me excited. It gets my blood going. You know, it's like this total basketball where like anybody can be a ball handler and anyone can shoot. And like that, you know, I'm starting to really feel that version compared to with LeBron where, you know, he'll give you 30. Like he can still get you 30 points, but it's going to require a lot of off the dribble three pointers from him, fewer drives towards the basket, fewer times taking contact. And he's being let down by his teammates, honestly, too. Like, drive and kick three is like, who's going to knock those shots down? You cannot drive and kick and pass to Westbrook. I mean, good luck. It's not going to work out. So, I mean, maybe some of it is context dependent, where if you're just starting a team from scratch trying to win a series, you'd still take LeBron.
If you flip them this year, I'd feel better about the Clippers title odds because I think LeBron, even though he hasn't been healthy, I feel better about his health.
Well, and that's always why I would come down on LeBron's side previously. But you look at these last 3 years in LA, he has missed a significant amount of time. And you know, I was even talking to your buddy, Dwayne Wade. I know you always try to smell like him in your day-to-day life. But
where's the D-Wade clone? Explain the inside joke. The D-Wade clone? I want it. I don't care.
No, so last year I did an interview with him, and he was just describing sort of how the injuries eventually accumulated in his final years to get him to the point where he was ready to retire, because guys don't want to retire unless they have to, right? And he was basically saying, like, yeah, that started for LeBron. Yeah. You know, and again, I feel like we don't talk about that enough because he is this indestructible, massive social media icon as well. Like, he's just so exposed in terms of media and everything else like that. You know, there is no offseason for LeBron content, right? Like, he goes to Bronny's game, boom, is a headline everywhere you look. But, you know, you actually, you know, go down the game logs from these last 3 years for the Lakers, other than the title season, he's missing an awful lot of time. And I think I trust Kawhi to get to the finish line now more than I trust LeBron to get there. And it's crazy to hear myself saying that, but I think it's true.
Especially because the last time we saw Kawhi get to the finish line was 2019. You mentioned LeBron not driving to the hoop anymore. This last season was the first time he averaged 30 points, I think, in like something like 15 or 14 years. And it was on a career high number of three-point attempts. Definitely something to keep an eye on. I want to move on to question number three. This is...
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, and real quick, I mean, double as many three-point attempts as he was taking, like when he first went back to Cleveland. You know, so the three-point totally revolution was like already underway. And LeBron was taking a little bit more than he did early in his career. But he is taking so many more now. And those are good shots. They're not great shots, Rohan. You know, the off the dribbles, they call it the strive for greatness three, where he does that little goofy fake, you know, the jab step fake, and then steps back into it. It's a great shot for a game winner. But when you go to that shot six, seven times over the course of a game, it does take your team out of rhythm. If you miss it, you know, you're maybe giving something up, coming back the other direction on a run out. You know, it's a sustainable way for LeBron to pass Kareem. I'm not sure it's a sustainable way to have like a top five offensive efficiency. And again, we just assumed any LeBron James team was going to have a top five offense for his entire prime. We can't even come close to assuming that anymore, even though he's got Anthony Davis, right? So it's the times they have changed here in LA.
It's bleak. This one, I'm calling myself out a little bit on this one as well. I believe, you know, I wrote the case last year, the undercover MVP, Nikola Jokic. No signature shoe, Ben. Last year, no Christmas game. Mm. You know, no Instagram, no Twitter. I mentioned no shoe, no commercials. Boban Marjanovic is in movies. You don't see Nikola Jokic in a movie. This guy's nothing, nowhere to be seen. Just wins MVPs, back-to-back MVPs. But if you look at the list of MVP winners since the year 2000, you know, up until including Shaq, Allen Iverson, the only two who did not make the NBA Finals, Steve Nash and Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose only won MVP because voters like you punished LeBron for exercising his free agent rights.
No. Not me. I was not a D Rose. I was not a D Rose guy that year.
Yeah.
If you can believe it.
But, the question is, are we coddling Nikola Jokic? You know, he wins MVP last year because there's no question the burden on him was massive. I wanted him to win MVP. I wrote as much. But when you think about where Giannis was back-to-back, you know, when he won those MVPs, people are demanding him to make the finals. At what point, you know, I thought Steph should have been number one on our top 100 this year. We put Giannis 1, Jokic 2, Steph 3. I wouldn't even put Jokic 2. I'm not holding you to our ranking, but...
Well, you're gonna love my ranking then, but continue.
But, you know, I think that there's a lot, you know, people are saying he's better than Embiid. People are saying, at worst, top five player in the league, et cetera.
He's definitely better than Embiid. I mean, come on, that's a different conversation. Like, that's not even close.
I'm like the biggest Jokic fan, and I'm willing to have that debate. But that brings me to my next point. Then,
no debate.
Where's the pressure on him then? Because I have to throw myself into that group, but I understand there've been injuries. We just typically don't make that excuse for other players. So, where does he fall in terms of this hierarchy? Can he be the best player on a title team? Can they build a title team around him? And should we be demanding more of him? Are we coddling Nikola Jokic?
Well, I mean, you said it was going to be five big questions. You just threw seven questions in 6 seconds at me. So I'm going to do my best to kind of parse through these, number one take, first of all, it's not close between Jokic and Embiid. The deciding factor between those two players is that one makes his teammates better no matter who he plays with, and the other guy hasn't quite figured out how to do that.
Yeah,
that's another deciding factor. But making your teammates better is so important if you're going to be a lead ball handler, another one, scoring option. And Embiid, it's turnovers, it's weird decisions, it's indecision in key moments with Jokic. It's the most beautiful passes in the league. Mm-hmm. And when he needs to, he steps up. I'm going to use this analogy to explain why you can't just caveat, throw it in at the end. Oh, I know there's been a few injuries. Okay, come on. You know Jokic loves the harness racing, right?
Yeah.
You know, every summer we get the goofy videos mm-hmm. of him out there with the horses at the farm, right? For the last 2 years, he has been the horse, and he's been dragging the entire organization, the entire Denver Nuggets organization, in the harness, right? This has been like Kevin Love with the Minnesota Timberwolves stuff. He's had to do literally everything. You take away his number two and number three most salaried player, you do that for any superstar guy, they're not going to mm-hmm. make the conference finals in the NBA right now. You're just, you know, you take away Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook from LeBron, exactly what's going to happen.
Take away Clay and Dre.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So you go right down the list. You know, it's pretty clear the impact that those guys have had. The great part about this season is that Jokic got the upgrade to be in the back of the carriage with all of his teammates for the first time really since the bubble.
It's the best.
Jamal Murray coming back with 18 months of rest on an ACL, he should be pretty much ready to go from the start. And if not immediately, then before the All-Star break, he should be back pretty close. You know, based on what we know about ACLs and how long they take to recover, too close to 100%, right? Hopefully you get something a little bit more from Porter. They made some other moves to balance their lineups and get some more defensive pieces in there, like a guy like KCP. And they can field a much better two-way closing lineup now with guys like Aaron Gordon and KCP than they ever have been able to in the past. And so he actually has a legitimate amount of help this year. Ironically, it's going to work against his MVP case mm-hmm. because people are going to say, all right, well, your numbers aren't wild. You're not leading the NBA in literally every single advanced statistic like you did the last 2 years. So therefore, you're somehow a worse player. And that's not going to be the case. He's just going to have a little bit more help this year. But the key question that you asked is, can he be the best player on a title team? And that's one where even as a big-time Jokic stan, I'm not convinced that he can be. He's going to have to prove it, just like anybody else. And, you know, the big hang-up is defensive versatility in terms of if you're going against teams like the Clippers, but also the Toronto Raptors have kind of figured this out where they're going to have five wing lineups. They're going to try to change the way the sport is played. That's kind of the direction I think we're going here over the course of the next 5 years, which is going to be Jokic's prime. That strategic shift puts a ton of pressure on him to move those big puppies out to the perimeter and guard somebody and switch and get back and rotate and recover for rebounds and everything else. And we have seen multiple teams, Chris Paul-led Phoenix Suns and other teams, LeBron with the Lakers, find ways to exploit him defensively. Not where he's a horrible, horrible defensive piece, but you could just kind of pick on him a little bit, much like Rudy Gobert has been picked on by a lot of those same teams in the playoffs, right? So that burden of proof is going to stick to him for as long as it takes for him to reach the finals. Now, does that mean we're coddling him? No. If anything, we're completely underrating and overlooking him. Mm. Now, you guys with your top 100 are actually overrating him slightly, but
I agree.
This guy can't even get on television in his own home market. You know, they don't even have a TV deal so people can watch him. This is the most invisible superstar we've had of this era, in terms of, the overexposure era. it's only basketball dorks on Twitter who actually really appreciate what this guy could do. And, you know, that's actually a pretty small percentage of the overall fandom. So I will still stand out for Jokic, but I do, you know, in the back of my mind, I worry he's not going to be able to, you know, get to that highest level of playing on the finals. But with that said, they could be the one seed in the West, man. They could have the best offense in the NBA this year. Would not surprise me.
Predicting them to be the one seed in the West. Again, he's the star that plays the most games. As a wise man has said on this podcast today and many times before, the best ability is availability. He's available. Coming out of the bubble, he played every single game that season. The fewest games Nikola Jokic has ever played in a season is 72, and that was when he played every single game coming out of the bubble. The guy's an absolute Iron Man. But that's why it shocked me. You know, everyone agreed Steph should be behind him on the top 100. And I was just thinking, if I want to win a championship this season, am I confident I could do it with Jokic? I'm not sure. And it's the defensive conversation has now been like, well, actually, he's not as bad as you think. But that doesn't mean he's good. It might mean he's average, but it doesn't mean he's good. And they're going to have to come up with an answer to playing a team like the Warriors, to playing a team like the Clippers. I do think they're going to close a lot of games this season with KCP, Bruce Brown, Aaron Gordon, and Jamal Murray. I think Michael Malone's going to have a quick hook for MPJ. I wish they could trade MPJ. If they could trade MPJ for Harrison Barnes, I mentioned this, I think, to our buddy Sharp. I think they should make that trade tonight, call it in. I just think they need a 3-and-D presence there, not a gunner. There's going to be times where Jokic gets fed up with MPJ. But
well, this is one thing that's hilarious about Tim Connelly is signs MPJ to like the worst contract in the NBA, basically bounces and then takes the riskiest trade of the summer by bringing on Rudy Gobert. It's like, man, he's like I'm going all in, I'm moving all in again. It's just like this guy is just on a run right now.
If you met, I'm sure you've interviewed and met Tim Connelly, it's not surprising given his personality. The guy's like, the guy's just, you know, he's ready to go for it. I respect that about him. I like that about him. I think people want to kill him for the MPJ contract, and I get it. But I'll say this. It's better than the alternative, which is a small market team looking to break it up, looking to trade one of their guys, you know, before
they sign Jeremy Grant, right?
Yeah. Well, they also tried to bring him back.
Right. Yeah. What I'm saying is when you lose a piece like that, when he's like your number three or four player, yeah, right, and you lose him for nothing with Jeremy Grant, if you do that again with Michael Porter Jr., then it just starts this narrative of you're not trying to take care of Jokic. And so, yeah, I'm not trying to kill him for that contract. I just think it's funny. It like, is. He's just going from casino to casino, just like laying down stacks, you know?
I guess the real question there, though, is can Jokic be the best player in a title team? And it's crazy to think that he could be a two-time MVP and maybe not. But I think this is going to be an interesting year for them, because I think we both agree that the Warriors and Clippers are, we'd probably put them above in terms of title odds. But this is probably the best team Jokic has ever had. And this is the year where the kid gloves are off. I want to see something. I won't be upset. I picked Denver to make the finals like for the last 3 or 4 years in a row. I think except for last year when Jamal was out. But this is the year I want to see something. This is the year I want to see something.
Well, you know, to me, it's really about ownership commitment in terms of, okay, are you willing to spend? And the fact that they've paid up big time for Jokic and taking care of him is great to see. They did the same thing with Murray. They did the same thing with MPJ. The Gordon trade. I love the Gordon trade, especially at that time, because that was really when it was in doubt. Mm-hmm. How serious are these guys, right? There are going to be vets available at the trade deadline this year, right? So Denver, get in the buying mix, you know, be one of these teams that tries to load up, try to compete for people who cut free on the buyout market. I think there's going to be a surplus of those types of guys, and the Lakers and the Nets to me are not going to be in position to just be loading up like they have these last couple of years, you know, on the LaMarcus Aldridges and the Blake Griffin type of players. And not that you would want those guys now, you know, I mean, neither one of those guys is going to do anything in the playoffs this year, but that type of player, if you're Denver, like, get aggressive, be in the mix, call in every favor you possibly can, just like get yourself a couple extra bodies. One other name though we haven't mentioned is Bones Highland, bro. That guy can ball a little bit. He's fun to watch.
So Sharp asked me if I was in on Bones. I'm worried about the hype running away for Bones Highland, because I think he's really good and he's really fun, but I'm a little worried about the hype running away, Golliver.
I hear you, but like this is the bones era of the NBA. Like if you're a little guard with some shake and a jumper, like you're just you're Tyler Hero, you're Jordan Poole, you're Tyrese Maxey. Like this is the time to be that player. And so it's like the bones era, you know? So I think he's come along at the right moment. I hear what you're saying, but look, they don't need him to even be a starter, right? Yeah. It's just get some buckets off the bench and, you know, maybe swing a playoff game by hitting four threes in a stretch, you know? Like that's sort of what the expectation is for him. And again, any shooter you could put around Jokic is just gold, right?
I love Bones Highland. Thank you for, by the way, backing up. You mentioned most invisible MVP. When we did that undercover MVP story on Jokic, people were like, all we hear about is he's the MVP. How could he be undercover? And it's like, there's a very small proportion of people who actually know who Nikola Jokic is, including Bones Highland, who I asked, were you a Nuggets fan? He said, we wasn't really watching the Nuggets like that. okay, this next question, you mentioned the LeBron extension, and this is weirdly going to factor into this next question I have. Does DeAndre Ayton end the season in Phoenix?
Can I answer a question with a question?
Please.
Is he relevant? Does it matter?
I think...
I don't know. Let me tell you a story actually real quick. so I was out in Vegas watching Wembanyama. Last week for a couple games, and the Lakers played two preseason games. One of the games was against the Suns. So they're warming up half an hour before the game. I mean, well before tip off, and Ayton's throwing up half court shots underhanded, just completely wasting everybody's time. I mean, just jacking up these half court shots. All right, whatever. It's a preseason game. It's Vegas. It's way before. Who cares, right? So they come back out, do the layup lines. Chris Paul's shooting free throws, trying to get a couple shots in. All of a sudden, a ball goes flying over his head. Again, it's a half-court shot by DeAndre Ayton, just chucking it at the basketball hoop, right? So Chris Paul just kind of shakes his head, shoots another free throw. What do you know? There goes another ball flying over his head. It might have been Bridges, but these guys are just not taking it seriously whatsoever. And after the second one kind of interrupted Chris's free throw routine, he walked over to the corner of the bench, sat down by himself, and was just, you know, in his own little world for like the next like 2 or 3 minutes. And it's like that kind of tension where, you know, Chris Paul is at one stage of his career and DeAndre Jordan has just signed this gigantic contract that he had to wait an entire year for and is clearly a little bit upset about, is at a totally different stage of his career. I'm not really sure how you resolve that tension. And I didn't see a ton of extra effort plays by the Suns that night. You know, it seemed like they were going through the motions a little bit. Again, I understand that it's preseason, but that's part of what makes Phoenix great, is going above and beyond to make up for the fact that they don't have the most amazing athletic talent at every single position, right? And to me, what does DeAndre Ayton do? He shoots mid-range jumpers. That's about it. He loves to take his little face-up mid-range jumper. He's got no bag on the block. He can finish a lob every once in a while. I don't think he's like this incredible one-man defensive team. I think he did a great job actually on Jokic in the playoffs a couple years ago, playing his role, buying in, clearing the defensive rebounds, doing the ugly stuff. But if you take him into just a league average team, you know, he doesn't have the benefit of being surrounded by that Phoenix group. I think he gets lost quick and he winds up being a, you know, I used to joke coming into the draft, like D-empty, you know, D-empty Ayton. Like, I just think it's going to be like 18 and 12.
For the guys on the Suns, man. Oh, God.
It's just 18 and 12 that don't impact winning whatsoever, right? So is he still there? Is he not there? I don't think it really matters either way. I don't think the Suns are going to be a force this year, and I don't think that DeAndre Ayton is a difference maker, and it's still amazing to me that they took this man over Luka Doncic, bro.
Unreal. What a disaster. We did the draft show together that night, and we both that night were like, why are you taking a center number one? Take Luka. We were both there. It happened.
Yeah. Come on. And, I mean, the only thing worse than that is the Bagley. I mean, Bagley was a worse pick.
I'm still Bagley hive, dude. I still believe in Bagley. Yeah. Okay, let me make – here's why I want to have the Suns conversation, because I have a few thoughts. One, is Ayton relevant? I agree. He's never going to be the kind of guy you throw the basketball to and say, go get me a bucket. It's not his game. Now, granted, it was on much less volume.
But he wants it to be his game. Doesn't he want it to be his game, though?
I don't know that he wants it to be his game as much as he maybe wants it to be a little bit less of... I think he's on the extreme where it's all Booker and Paul, and maybe he wants a little bit less of that. But I don't know that he's craving to be a number one. I think
fair enough. But he also, what's he going to do with the extra touches? Yeah. And like, that's the, I mean, that's where like, I don't envy Monty. Cause like, you can't just go to your center and be like, bro, you have no bag. Like, you can't shoot threes. You can't do anything on the block.
He did shoot better from mid-range than Jason Tatum last year, percentage-wise, which is hilarious to think about. Again,
well, that's because nobody guards him, dude. Yeah. Why you're gonna, anytime Phoenix comes down and it ends in a DeAndre Ayton 16-foot jumper, you won that possession if you're the defense. I understand he can hit it at a pretty good rate, but if the ball's not in Chris's hands and it's not in Booker's hands and it's not a driving kick three to Mikal Bridges, your defense is so happy. Yeah. Go ahead. DeAndre Ayton will never lead a playoff team by shooting mid-range jumpers. This guy is, I mean, if DeMar can't do it, DeAndre Ayton can't do
it. The reason,
and that's the problem, is that Monty should be able to say that to Ayton, but I don't think Ayton would ever be able to hear that message, so it probably doesn't get communicated.
I think that he's relevant because I think ultimately the best version of him can be an important member of a finals team. You mentioned his defense on Jokic. I think he's someone you could use against Anthony Davis. I think that he actually held up well against Giannis in that Bucks-Suns finals. I believe they were a plus with Ayton on the floor in that series. Obviously,
well, he did until he didn't.
Yeah,
I mean, Giannis, the last couple of games,
yes,
you know.
For sure. But I mean, in terms of guys who were going to put up a modicum of a fight in that series against that version of Giannis, he actually did probably as good a job as anyone you could have expected in that series. And the thing about Ayton is we're on the same page. He's not a max player. He's not a number one. But the margin between him and Biombo, even if someone like Biombo gives you some of the same things, doesn't get in the way, blah, 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 those margins end up mattering in the playoffs. And the reason I bring up does Ayton finish the end of the season in Phoenix is because they've had a weird offseason. They made basically no moves. They've gotten no help for Chris Paul, which, you know, why didn't they pick up Dennis Schroeder? That made no sense to me. Like, they needed to sign a guard desperately. I'm happy for campaign and the campaign renaissance. That hype kind of ended quickly a bit in the playoffs. They need help. I believe they can still trade Ayton this summer, just not until after January. So here's what I did. Why was this never a rumor? LeBron signs the extension. Why doesn't LeBron try to force his way to Phoenix instead of Kevin Durant? Go play with Chris Paul and Devin Booker. You're still close enough to LA. Like, you can see your family. Chris Paul's family lives in Los Angeles, okay? Him and Chris Paul can road trip together back to LA whenever they want, you know, have someone drive the Maybach from between Phoenix and LA. Would the Lakers? I mean, the Lakers with like Ayton and Bridges around Anthony Davis. I would watch that team. Like, to me, it's that should have been a rumor. And you talk about LeBron could have controlled his own destiny, took the money. I think he made a mistake not trying to go to a team like Phoenix.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to do the truth serum thing and ask Chris how much basketball he thinks LeBron has left, and then ask LeBron the same question about Chris.
If they actually want to play together.
How do they really feel about teaming up at this stages of their career? But I think it's a completely fair question. I mean, I saw Monty make a comment that they did want to get Chris some more help. They wanted to move him off the ball more. And part of the reason they want to move him off the ball is he was struggling to bring it up the court during the playoffs. I mean, he was getting hounded. He was having to turn his back on the dribble, you know, barely getting it over 8 second counts and all this stuff. And that's not like Chris just – and let me just say, it's like not Chris forgetting the rules of basketball or like, oh, wow, they caught me slipping. It's that he's 37 and – you know, there's a lot of younger guards, you know, trying to come for his spot and challenge him physically, and it just gets tougher and tougher every single year for them. You know, part of my question about does it matter if Ayton's still there or not, it's a little bit more about just the Suns as a whole. You know, when Crowder wants out, that's a huge red flag. Ayton's all weird and upset, that's a red flag. Booker's posting this stuff on his Instagram about, you know, being upset. They lose this game to the Adelaide 36ers, that's a red flag. And, you know, Chris hit a wall in the finals, a very clear wall 2 years ago. He hit a huge wall in the second round last year.
Literally the moment he turned 37, it was shocking. It was. I wrote him like on his 37th birthday because he's just coming off like a 30-point game. I was like, this guy, age doesn't matter. Look at his playoff. He had the closeout. And then the minute he turned 37, it fell off a cliff.
Yeah, he got declined for his birthday, right? But that's just how it goes, you know? Like, and there's no shame in this to say, hey, you know what? Chris Paul, we thought you were going to get old at 34. You didn't, but now it's starting to happen at 37. Same deal with LeBron. Like, you got these guys have done an amazing job of extending their primes or their post primes, whatever you want to call it, but it is really inevitable. And I thought Father Time scored real points on LeBron and Chris Paul last year, and I think it's going to happen again.
I'm very nervous for the Suns. The disaster potential is absolutely there, which is why I'm focused on the Ayton piece, because while I agree he's not a number one, I still think he could have value to many teams around the league, even a team like, you know, Detroit, Toronto. I think there's situations in which he could be really good with the right coach, still bring a lot of value to certain teams. And if they are going to get help for Chris Paul and Devin Booker, he's really the only move they have to make. Like, Jay Crowder is not going to bring back anyone better than Jay Crowder.
Well, here's what I'd say. Toronto, don't blow it on Toronto, because Toronto is a sleeping giant, bro. They have all their picks going forward. They have no bad contracts. They have two current all-stars in Van Vliet and Siakam. They've got as many wings as you could possibly want. And then they've got the rising franchise star with Scottie Barnes. And they got the best GM in the league, right? So they can go any direction they want in terms of when do they go out and build around Scottie Barnes. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're going to be smart enough to do, or to not do rather, what Dallas did, which was like kind of blow their load on Kristaps Porzingis. And then like, oh, that didn't work. And then you spend 3 years trying to pick up the pieces after that trade doesn't work. They're going to be able to be real targeted in getting their number two star alongside Scottie Barnes. And I think, to me, like, the team to buy stock in for the next 5 years is the Toronto Raptors, because they have all the pieces, all the flexibility, and the kind of vision and organizational philosophy to be able to put that back together into a title team. And no one's talking about them right now. I mean, we mentioned five or six other teams in the East, and they're probably not going to be contenders this year. But you talk about 3 to 5 year window. I would rather be the Raptors than almost any other team in that conference. And I'm not even just pandering to the Toronto Termites, who I warred with on this episode or this podcast for like 5 years. I'm being genuine, man. They have a really bright future.
They are. I feel like this used to happen. It doesn't happen as much anymore. And when it used to happen, it was cap space. But they're the team that just needs to wait for the right star. Like, they're in position where they don't need to gather the assets to make a move. They just need to wait for the right person to become available. And like, that, I don't, the issue is like, who's that person going to be? I don't know who that star is going to shake loose that brings them over the top, but it's going to be very interesting if that kind of player becomes available. I mean, maybe they revisit Durant in a year or something like that, but I'm with you.
Or Shai Gilgeous, Alexander. I mean, you know, they got some options, you know, coming over the next couple of years, and they could even go bigger swing than that, because how long is Booker going to be in Phoenix?
Yeah, I was
going to
say Book.
Apart,
there's shit, man. Maybe they get in on LeBron. Who knows? Could you imagine LeBron moving from LA to Toronto? Here's my last question. We don't spend a lot of time on this, but I just feel like this is, to me, the most polarizing team, the most unpredictable team. And I go back and forth on all the time. Should the Brooklyn Nets be the favorites?
For what?
Let me make the case.
You're not talking about a title
Let
favorite.
Let me make the case.
You're talking about
Let me make the case.
You're talking about an NBA championship for the Brooklyn Nets?
Let me make the case for the Brooklyn Nets
Rohan,
as title
favorites. Rohan,
you're
off your rocker,
Let
bro.
Let me make the
Come
case
on,
for
bro.
The Brooklyn Nets as title favorites. Let me make the case. I believe someone on this podcast talked about the future of basketball. Let's play five forwards at once. Ball handlers at every position. Guys who can defend. You know, the Nets can throw out Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, Ben Simmons, Joe Harris, and Royce O'Neal this year. I think that's going to be a deadly lineup if they actually play together. There was a possession last night.
You love these ifs, man.
I do.
Love these
ifs,
man.
I'm making, this is, you know, this is all hypotheticals. The season hasn't started yet. All we have is hope. There was a possession last night.
Look,
in the
bottom line, bro.
Game.
Hold on. If ifs were fists, you'd be passed out on Hollywood Boulevard after this episode. Come on, Rohan. Deal with reality.
Listen,
not hypothetical.
I'll give you reality. Last night, there was a possession where Giannis was trying to post up Kevin Durant, couldn't gain any ground on KD, turned the ball over, like trying to make some kind of terrible baseline pass. This was just one-on-one, no help, KD on Giannis. The Nets bring the ball down the floor. On that very next possession, KD, pull up three, hand in his face, bang, nothing. You sometimes you just watch Durant, and you're like, I mean, last year they had, you know, they didn't have Joe Harris, who could have made a huge help in that Celtics series. They didn't have Simmons, who, at once upon a time, you were trying to convince me that Ben Simmons was the future of the NBA. In the role that maybe he's finally best suited for, he can play with two or three other ball handlers at once. There's not going to be pressure on him to be point guard. There isn't going to be a 7-footer blocking his way in the paint. There's, you know, you talked about it, that Sixers have a burden of proof, right? They're these choke artists. Celtics are dealing with this coaching situation. The Bucks have this incredibly old rotation. We saw the Nets push the Bucks when they were hurt. Are we sure that they maybe shouldn't be the favorite?
Yeah, we're dead sure. Here's the thing. I mean, first of all, defensively, they can't stop your best guard, right? And all the burden's on KD to handle the big defensive assignments in terms of forwards, potentially centers, small ball lineups, and all that. I don't love that over the course of the season, because what we've seen happen over these last couple of years, anytime they have a problem that needs to be solved, Kevin has to be the answer. And then Kevin gets hurt because they're playing him 40 minutes in January, because otherwise they can't keep their head above water, right? And when you really look at Kevin Durant's Media Day comments about what upset him about the Nets, his main gripe was that when he went out injured, they lost 11 straight games because everybody else quit, right? Well, they got a whole lot of guys who I question, are they still locked in, left on this roster, right? So I think I start with their defensive aptitude. Do they defend on a championship level? I would say absolutely not. Do they have the consistency to withstand adversity across an 82-game season? I would say absolutely not. Have they found pieces that make Kevin Durant's life better or easier? And I would say, in fact, they've found pieces that have made his life more complicated, namely Kyrie Irving.
Well, they found
each
other.
But then also a lot of these secondary players, yeah. Well, yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're trying to build in a lab a team that would accentuate Kevin Durant's positives, you would not find a guy who shows up for work on Tuesdays and Thursdays and doesn't call in sick when he's not going to show up, right? Like, it's just not how you would do it. I mean, KD's been a rock solid, consistent, night in, night out type of guy his entire career. That's who he's always prided himself on being. And you want to go out and find other guys like that. Then you throw the Ben Simmons thing on top of it. This guy is giving 5-paragraph-long answers to explain why he shot an air ball at a preseason event for fans. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, it's just such a unique situation with Simmons and trying to get his confidence, you know, in the right direction. And KD has already been on the record, his quote this week, I am not going to babysit anybody. Wow. You know, like, if you're Ben Simmons, what's the implication of him? You know, what's he calling you? Like, what's he implying that, you know, where is this going to go? You throw on top of it the fact that Steve Nash got the hottest seat in the entire NBA. And then also they have to pull together their chemistry and camaraderie on the fly this season, because so much of the rotation has turned over. They lost Bruce Brown. They lost Blake Griffin, LaMarcus Aldridge, Drummond, Goran Dragic. Hold on. Goran Dragic, look, these guys are not good players, but they all played important roles for the Nets last year. Goran Dragic was their third best player against the Celtics in the playoffs, and he could not wait to get out of there. Patty Mills also a year older, not the same guy he was when they grabbed him. And part of the reason why they were able to push Milwaukee was because they had Harden. And unfortunately, Harden got injured, and that was sort of the difference-making moment of that series. They don't have Harden anymore, and he also wanted to get out of there. And I guess I would say, don't get fooled by the talent on the paper. They were the most dysfunctional team that I spent any amount of time around last year. They didn't solve any of the underlying issues. In fact, they're looked at the problems, kind of, you know, smiled and nodded at KD this summer, and then said, okay, yeah, go right back to how we had it previously. We're not going to change anything. Perfect decision making. Great work by their organization. So I'm out on them. You're never going to be able to sell me on them, and I hope I wasn't too cruel in beating down your hypothesis.
No, it's just, if you had told someone in the fall of 2020 that your top nine was Kyrie, Harris, Durant, Simmons, Claxton, Mills, Seth Curry, Royce O'Neal and TJ Warren, it would be a runaway favorite. And we all know how much can change in 2 years. I just have a little bit of hope. I also, this is going to sound like a joke, this team has to sign Dwight Howard. Like, they need one more center. They Dwight is a character, should probably still be in the league, even if they just need someone to pick up five fouls and annoy Embiid. Like, they need one more center besides Claxton, but...
Well, great culture guy, too, you know. I'm sure it just helped pull everything together.
I think every year I go back, I just swing wildly, wildly back and forth, but I'm currently in an in position on the Brooklyn Nets. I just can't quit them, well, dude. They're my kryptonite.
I hear you, and here's how I would split the difference, or, you know, kind of reach a compromise with you. KD's still a lot better than he looked in last year's playoffs, right? And he would be so much more effective if he was playing for an organization or with a supporting cast that really knew how to maximize what he does well and knew how to make his life easier, keep the big minutes off of him, keep the huge defensive responsibilities off him during the regular season, and set him up for success in the playoffs. He was gassed out against the Boston Celtics, which is a rare thing for us to see. It was probably the worst playoff series he's ever played. I was stunned that they were not able to get game three or game four at home. I mean, that's just a team rolling over and wanting to, you know, go on summer vacation. That's not what we expect from a Kevin Durant-led team. And he needed a trade this summer so badly. I mean, I can't tell you how excited I got on his behalf when the trade rumors leaked, because it was like, great, you know, you need to get out. Congratulations for being honest, not being in denial about it, and, you know, being a little confrontational, being a little selfish. You need a better situation. And he just didn't get it. And it would have been better in Phoenix. It would have been better in Toronto. It would have been better in a lot of places, and instead it's back to Brooklyn. And I suspect, you know, they could be better the next year and still not be where they should be on paper, and I think that's probably where it's going to land.
Yeah, I think you're right. He should have signed with the Miami Heat when he had the chance, and we've seen what's happened since. Ben, that will do it for today's episode of Open Floor. Thank you so much for coming back, man. This was a lot of fun. I guess I'll be seeing you in Golden State, whether you like it or not. Please subscribe to Ben's podcast, The Greatest of All Talk, the GOAT podcast. I know so many of the Open Floor Globe members are already there, but if you're not, please listen to him and Sharp over at the GOAT podcast. You can also see Ben's work at the Washington Post. And again, his book is Bubble Ball, available in English and Japanese and other languages. But as far as I know, definitely right, English and Japanese. Ben, thank you so much. I guess we'll talk to you guys at the start of the season next week.